Exploring how we can transform our communities in the 21st century with the support of St Ives Chambers, RHE Global and Me Learning. Welcome. This is the Community Safety Podcast with your host, Jim Nixon.
This week, the Community Safety Podcast brings you a special episode involving Neighbourhood Watch. My guest is the Chief Executive Officer of Neighbourhood Watch, and he's going to explain to us what he's doing to improve Neighbourhood Watch and bring this scheme into the 21st century. Please take a listen to a snippet of today's interview.
I really think there's something about the key to it is connectedness and communication. And I don't think that's necessarily physical. I think it's really important that we do literally know our neighbours. We don't have to be best mates with our neighbours, but you know, being able to have a conversation, just say hello, nod to them as you go to work. I think that is a significant way of beginning to kind of reconnect.
It's now time for the Community Safety Podcast.
Welcome to the Community Safety Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Nixon. I've been working in community safety for over 25 years. This podcast will explore how we can transform communities in the 21st century. I'm delighted to introduce today's guest as John Haywood Cripps. John was appointed CEO of Neighbourhood Watch Network in January 2018 with a remit to rebuild on the fantastic history and achievements of Neighbourhood Watch and help the movement move forward to work in areas of high crime and gain a more diverse membership and strengthen communities by embracing modern technology while keeping true to the foundations of Neighbourhood Watch. Welcome to the Community Safety Podcast, John. I really appreciate you agreeing to come on as a guest.
Really pleased to be here, Jim. It's great.
Thank you. John, I always start off my podcast interviews just delving a little bit into the person that I'm interviewing and just getting to know them a little bit better. I think it's always good for the audience to know a little bit about you before you hit the dizzy heights of CEO of Neighbourhood Watch Network.
Sure.
So tell me a little bit about you growing up and how you came to be the CEO of Neighbourhood Watch Network.
When I was born into an army family, my dad was in the army all his life. So we travelled around quite a lot. We were based in various places in the UK and in what was then West Germany, but also in Hong Kong. And my dad served in, you know, various places, Northern Ireland, various different places. So we always sort of travelled around quite a lot. But when I was thinking about this interview, it sort of struck me how even from a young age, I was really aware of kind of community. Even though, as I say, we travelled around quite a lot, the army and the forces have a very strong sense of community. And certainly that kind of strong sense of community and wanting to help yourself and your community is a strong part of how I grew up, really. And even though we moved around quite a lot, which can be sort of upsetting or unsettling, I think because the sort of armed forces have so much in common with each other, they have that strong kind of sense of community and sense of resilience. And I think that's something that's kind of stayed with me through my career. And I kind of went to school and university and stuff, and then I worked to start with as an outward bound instructor. I'm sort of keen on sort of outdoor pursuits and worked with young offenders in Brighton and in Wales. And I think it was often what I sort of observed when I think back is that lots of those young people, while they had some sense of community, they certainly didn't have sort of pride in their community and often didn't really feel part of a community, felt sort of on the outside of a community. So I did that for a while, and then I trained as a youth worker and a social worker, and I was a child protection social worker for a long time, so I spent more of my life than anyone should in court, and working closely with police forces investigating child protection issues. And then I left social care and moved into the charitable sector and was the children's team manager for the Children's Country Holidays Fund. So this is a charity that gives very disadvantaged children and young people the chance of a kind of either a therapeutic or a holiday, a break from quite difficult lives. And we used to work with them while on holiday with lots of volunteers to give these children a break. And I was there for quite a long time and then left to join Victim Support, and was there at Victim Support for about 9 years and finished. When I finished there, I was a director. I was the interim chief exec for a while. And really enjoyed my time there. And again, it's really almost all the work at victim support being delivered by volunteers. And I think I've always worked in organisations that have really utilised volunteers. And I think I'm going to never forget how fantastic volunteers are and how just ordinary members of the community doing extraordinary things. They're often quite small or relatively small, but really fantastic things. So I was there for a while and then spent a brief spell with EY as a consultant and then came back to the charitable sector as the CEO of Neighbourhood Watch.
So you are a perfect fit, given that sort of resume there, to be the CEO of such a well-known sort of community-based organisation, really, given that sort of history.
Well, I like to think so. I mean, I certainly feel, as I said, I feel really immersed in kind of organisations that where volunteers deliver fantastic work. And I think, you know, even my mum's volunteered all her life. I've volunteered. I mean, it's kind of quite central to my kind of core, really. And I think working in the criminal justice sector to supporting sort of vulnerable people has been part of that as well. So yeah, I think there's a, it felt a bit like coming home in a weird sort of way when I joined Neighbourhood Watch.
Absolutely. I've experienced these type of volunteers a couple of times in my career. Number one was when I worked in the police service and I had the privilege of working with special constables. I'm totally in awe of those people, because to do that job for free is a tremendous respect for them, really, in terms of what they do, and that, you know, that they are literally on the front line. And and also with victim support, I still do work now with victim support on a daily basis, and their volunteers, as you already have said, are absolutely fantastic people. And I was really blown away by just how amazing those and well trained those volunteers were to deliver a really high quality ASB service.
Yeah, I think you know, this country, well, the UK has got such a fantastic kind of history and legacy of people volunteering. I think it's feels like a bit like the backbone of the country. I think volunteers are absolutely fantastic. I mean, they're not, you know, it's not always easy, and volunteers, if they're going to be trained and supportive, it's not free to support, and you know, and volunteers do need support and training. But I think they're fantastic. Yeah, as individuals, they're brilliant. I think everyone should have a go at volunteering.
Oh yeah, I totally agree with you. I think it is a massive reward when you do stuff like that, and long may it continue. And I hope, you know, through the course of the next few years, we see more and more. I'm hoping that COVID has brought people a little bit closer together, and hopefully it will start people to recognise that communities are really important in the 21st century.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of what's happened over the last 12 months with lockdown and COVID, where there's been lots and lots of people have volunteered, often not in a formal way, but kind of just volunteering in their community to support their neighbour, to, I don't know, to get a prescription for Fred down the road, or doing Mabel's shopping. I think lots of people have done that. And one of the things that's been, I think, really fantastic is that lots of those people that have volunteered are not from where you'd normally find volunteers come from. Often volunteers are kind of retired, and you know, relatively comfortably off. But what's been fantastic, there's been loads of young people volunteering, lots of people from communities that have got multiple kind of levels of deprivation or high crime, those sort of things, and people with disabilities and long-term illness. Loads of people have been volunteering and have found, you know, something that they can volunteer for during COVID. So I'm with you, Jim. I really, really hope that continues.
That's really great to hear, you know, because I think we touched on this when we just briefly met a few weeks ago when we had a chat offline. And one of the things that was always a big concern for me was that exactly what you're saying. I think we've always been quite rich with volunteers around the sort of the older age groups. But I think what I really want to see, and it's refreshing to hear you say that, that we're starting to see a younger batch of volunteers coming through, because I think we need a mix, really, not just one sort of age set. Would you agree with that? Yeah.
Oh, completely. I mean, we need all sorts of different people to volunteer. We want volunteers to represent our community, and our community is rich and diverse and different ages, different backgrounds. And I think that we want all those people to be able to volunteer. And I think organisations like Neighbourhood Watch and other big volunteer organisations kind of have a responsibility to make it easy for those people to volunteer. And if people want to sort of dip in and out of volunteering, then I think we need to make that possible for them. Because I think the kind of traditional model of volunteering where someone joins a volunteer, becomes a volunteer, gets trained and stays with that organisation for, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years sometimes, that's changing. And people, I think, kind of are a bit more, either a bit more busy or a bit more picky, I don't know. But people want to be able to dip in and out of volunteering. I mean, you know, organisations like Neighbourhood Watch, you know, this is something that we will really try and do over the next few years and have already started to try and do, is to make it easy for people to dip out, dip in and out of volunteering.
I think that's a really good point. And yeah, you're right, you know, we live busy lives, and when we get back on track, I think people are going to very quickly get back into that swing of things, although things will never probably be the same after COVID. But you're absolutely right, you know, I think you do need to give volunteers that flexibility, because I think probably something that puts them off is exactly what you said, that I think the mindset at the moment is, oh, I've got to commit, you know, 20 odd years to this or whatever, or a good chunk of my time. And I think that does put people off, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course it does. I mean, you know, if I'm honest, it puts me off. I mean, I do some volunteering, but I do it in a way that's very straightforward in my community, and it suits me, suits my time, and it means I can do it. And I know, you know, I've got kind of young adult children in their 20s, and they do some sort of what loosely could be called volunteering. But if it was complicated, and if they had to join and go to various meetings and stuff, they probably wouldn't. But if they can just click, find out some what they can do, get involved, and then not get involved for a little while, then that is what they do. And I think, yeah, as I say, we need to make that work for everybody.
We do. We need to be as flexible as possible. Touching on COVID, you know, I've worked with Neighbourhood Watch for many years, and it is a very sort of, you know, front-facing meetings, let's all get together. How challenging have Neighbourhood Watch Network found COVID?
It's been, I think, like lots of organisations, it's been really challenging. Having said that, I think it's also proved and given an opportunity for Neighbourhood Watch and lots of the local watches that are really kind of hyper-local, just on streets, where people have kind of volunteered more and got more involved. I mean, we've had a real upsurge in people wanting to join Neighbourhood Watch, you know, online and in local areas, and as I say, sort of younger people as well. So there's been an upsurge in people wanting to get involved. But obviously, without actual contact, that's been quite challenging. But it's kind of forced us to people to have meetings online, which then in some ways allows more people to get there. If you're really busy, you can probably make a half an hour online meeting, whereas if you had to travel to a physical meeting, you might not have. So I think those things have been quite helpful in a very weird sort of way for Neighbourhood Watch. I mean, we've been really careful to make sure that those people that aren't kind of digitally connected have stayed connected within Neighbourhood Watch and within our community. So things like a postcard campaign or a phoning tree campaign, where one person phones two, each of those people phone two people. So people that are isolated and not online, particularly during lockdown, were having some sort of social contact, because of how, you know, all of us felt isolated, and it was very weird at the beginning of lockdown. But, you know, lots of people were, you know, deeply isolated and troubled. And I think Neighbourhood Watch, along with loads of other organisations, really stepped up to make sure people stayed connected, either on the phone or digitally, you know, in some fashion, so people were, not as isolated as little as possible.
That's really good to hear, and I think you're absolutely right in what you're saying there about, you know, sometimes if I was sort of volunteering for something, I've had a bit of a rough day at work or whatever, if I've got to physically then go back out of the house, I'm kind of like a little bit demotivated. But you're absolutely right, if I could just think, you know what, you know, it's only going to be half an hour, I'm going to go up into the bedroom and put the laptop on and still be part of that meeting. Actually, I think this COVID situation, as bad as it's been, it has opened those kind of opportunities. And I think it will, in time, increase that membership of, you know, the millions you already have. But I think it will go a long way to increase that and show that regular participation.
Yeah, I mean, along with other organisations, are trying to be more flexible. I mean, we have lots of people that are now part of Neighbourhood Watch online groups or Facebook groups, you know, or use WhatsApp and those kind of things. And I think initially there was a view that, well, you know, Neighbourhood Watch is about knowing your neighbour in your street and physically meeting them. And it is. And that's the real core and the guts of Neighbourhood Watch. But there's lots of people where, through time or whatever else, that doesn't really work. Whereas some of the online platforms, as I say, like Facebook and other things, can be really powerful, not just in keeping in contact, but actually in fighting crime. We've had some amazing kind of examples where big Facebook groups have been able to report either, you know, that there's been a burglary locally, and so local people to keep out of. There was an amazing story in West Mercia where a couple of I'm not quite what sure you call them, kind of vintage cars were on the back of a low loader, and that the low loader was stolen with the cars on top. And then in real time, there were about, I think there were several thousand people on the Neighbourhood Watch Facebook group in that area. The message went out in real time that this had been nicked, and lots of people on the lookout for it. And I think it became quite obvious that it was being sought after. And I think within a few hours, the low loader was found abandoned with the cars on. And obviously whoever had been taking it had just decided to leave it because it was, you know, there were too many people out looking for it. So I think there are examples like that where in real time, Neighbourhood Watch groups, by using and utilising Facebook and the internet, not only get more people who might not join a kind of street-based scheme, but do want to receive information and want to take part and be active, but do that electronically.
Yeah, I think the power of social media, that's the positive side of social media. I think that people that, again, probably don't want to be sort of, you know, facing, going to meetings like that, but they can still be really active and play a massive part in, you know, preventing and detecting crime. I think it's absolutely brilliant, and it's so good to see the different types of ways that people can get involved. The more the merrier for me. If it helps to solve crime, prevent crime, it's got to be a really good thing, and it's great to see.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely that. And I think it's also, as we were saying just before, in terms of COVID, there, you know, it was enabled people to have a bit of contact, to be able to pass information to each other. You know, there's lots of examples of, you know, I think the success of the volunteering schemes, not just in Neighbourhood Watch, but in lots of organisations during COVID to support communities, loads of, almost all of that was done on the internet, you know, and people kind of signing up, agreeing to volunteer and support their neighbours. And that was all possible, even though we were in lockdown and not able to actually physically meet. So it is, yeah, there are real, I mean, obviously there are downsides to social media and the internet, but there are huge upsides as well, as we all know.
I've joined a few, actually, John, since I've been sort of running the podcast. I've been quite open and honest with people and said what I'm doing, and that I'm a, you know, community safety kind of professional. And they've been really great at letting me in, and, you know, I'll comment on things. But they're brilliant. They're so professional and really well run, with thousands and thousands of members within each network. It's absolutely brilliant to see. And, you know, you can see the amazing work that's going on with those volunteers that are all linking in together. And like you say, around the vintage cars, it's just brilliant. If it's assisting in bringing communities together and detecting or preventing crime, it's just a brilliant innovation, really, for me to see this, how Neighbourhood Watch is evolving.
Yeah, I think the volunteers in Neighbourhood Watch in all the kind of local areas across England and Wales have been fantastic at kind of embracing some of that, you know, and there's pitfalls and there's hiccups, as there is with anything. But I think, you know, the volunteers and the associations around England and Wales have really kind of picked up on using social media and the internet as best they can, you know, and really picking up on those advantages. And of course it does, it keeps people connected and can really help reduce and prevent crime.
Yeah, definitely. The police service over the years, I mean, I left in 2016, but prior to that, you know, we'd suffered massive cuts in budgets and in numbers. You know, some real talent and experience was obviously lost to you know, early retirements, and it was devastating at the time. I'd always done some amazing work with our Neighbourhood Watch schemes around my various patches, but how important is the Neighbourhood Watch to the police service?
I think it's really valuable. I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't say that the relationship between the police and Neighbourhood Watch in different parts of the country ranges from not great to absolutely excellent. And I think there's a real kind of two-way responsibility to that. But I mean, we work closely with the police. We're obviously not the police force, and we are an independent charity, but we do work really closely. And I think the police in the UK have always been very, you know, the sort of Peelian principles of being policed by the people, for the people kind of thing. And I think having the community and having the respect of individuals and just going back a little while, but the police originally sort of patrolling the beat, and while, as you say, through sort of cutbacks, that's often just now not physically possible, and the pressures on police forces with limited budgets is huge. So I think utilising volunteers who are keen and capable and can really help around community policing is really important, and where it works well, it's fantastic. I mean, we've had, we've lots of very senior police officers saying, we know that our work with Neighbourhood Watch in the community has reduced burglary by, 30%. There was some fantastic work in Greenwich with community workshops with the police, and certainly in Suffolk, there's been lots of work with the police and neighbourhood antisocial behaviour teams in Ipswich. I mean, sort of lots of community sessions where it helps, the visibility of the police, and can really support the police who are, have more than they could possibly do with their, with their resources and time. So I think it can really, really help the police. But equally, Neighbourhood Watch has to understand that the police have limited resources. They can't be at every meeting and in every street. And I think when there's a close relationship, it does work really fantastically well. And Neighbourhood Watch feels supported by the police, and the police get a real benefit from Neighbourhood Watch and that kind of, not just information of what's happening locally, but that kind of real legitimacy in communities that the police rely on.
When I was a police sergeant running quite a busy neighbourhood team, my Neighbourhood Watch schemes were such a rich source of information. I always sort of say that there sometimes can be a missing piece to a jigsaw when you're putting together say something around drug dealing, or say for someone is burgling on a particular area. And I always used to think that those individuals, the eyes and ears of that community, it used to give me those final pieces of that jigsaw, and it would be so, so helpful. And like you say, they became part of that community. We worked together and they got to know me. And I think it's a great way as well of breaking down those barriers that police officers are just normal, ordinary people, like those Peelian values. And I think it just goes a long way to the police service working so closely with that community and getting fantastic results. So I just hope that we can keep building on this over the next few years, because it's just a brilliant way of working. As I said, with numbers dwindling, I know Boris Johnson is looking at increasing numbers, but it's going to take time to get those bobbies back on the beat. So I think your organisation plays such a massive part in this.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, there are limited resources for most kind of services that to the UK, whether that's mending roads, the police, or social care, and the police have really limited resources. So I think it's all of us have, if we're interested, we have a responsibility to our communities, if we're able to kind of help. I think there's nobody, or very, very few people, apart from a few criminals, that wouldn't want crime reduced in the area they live and want to feel prouder of their community, want to feel safe in their community. I mean, we all absolutely feel that. And I think Neighbourhood Watch can have a real part in that, of making people feel not worried, but safer in their community, so they can go out, they can do what they want to do, and not feel worried or likely to be a victim of crime. Even down to just making sure people have the right information, that they're protecting themselves or their car or their property as much as possible. But as you say, also looking out for things. We know there's a load of, or it's on, significantly on the increase, kind of human trafficking and modern slavery. And so if you live in a community, you may well notice things. And whereas the police, who quite obviously they may live in their own community, but they're in and out of different communities, they can't be everywhere all the time. Whereas we all actually live in our communities and are there all the time. So the information I think we can provide, and the volunteers can provide the police, is invaluable.
I think as well, from my experience, sometimes the perception of crime can be, magnified. And when you've got a close-knit community group like Neighbourhood Watch or an active tenants and residents association, sometimes that sort of that regular contact, that regular meeting up and sharing information, I think sometimes it can reduce that fear of crime, and I've worked in areas where they think it's really, really bad. But actually, when you drill down into the actual figures and you drill down into what really is going on, it's nowhere near as bad. And I just think these kind of organisations like yours, it goes a long way to reducing that fear of crime as well.
Completely. I mean, we know there isn't there isn't much of a correlation between fear of crime and actual levels of crime. Often areas that have quite high crime, people feel relatively safe, and the reverse can be true as well. So I think having, as you say, the police and organisations like Neighbourhood Watch involved in that community and making sure people are aware of the reality of either crime and what people can do about it makes us all feel safer. I mean, we all want to feel safe in our homes, safe in our communities. And I think the more connected we are, and I think this is a kind of core part of Neighbourhood Watch and moving into the future, around making sure that, you know, we organisations like Neighbourhood Watch have a real positive impact on crime as well as community cohesion. And so, you know, just even in terms of community health and well-being is improved as well as crime being reduced, which I think is what everybody wants. I mean, the police want that as much as anybody else. I think, it's such a common driver that we all have to feel safe and secure in our homes and in our communities.
Absolutely. That moves nicely into my next question, really. We've already talked about some of the innovation around online stuff, but what other things are you doing to transform Neighbourhood Watch? What other projects are you working on at the moment?
There are loads of local projects on local level. So I mean, we've talked a bit about kind of the use of social media. I mean, in North Wales, Neighbourhood Watch has been working with local schools around traffic accidents, so making sure that local communities and schools are kind of in one area they were developed like posters and banners that can go on areas where there's been lots of accidents that school kids have been involved with, and it's enabled, you know, the accidents have gone down. So in the West Midlands, there have been there's about 50 volunteers in one part of the West Midlands that this is very much with the police, and there are targeted patrols at different times, and car crime is reduced from once every few days to about one car crime in every 14 weeks, which is just phenomenal. And so I think those are some of the local things that have happened. On a more national scale, we've got a fantastic project with one of our sponsors, Avast, which is Cyberhood Watch, and that's about equipping local ambassadors to be expert. We train them and equip them to be experts in cybercrime and ensuring people are safe and know what to do to reduce the likelihood of being victims of crime, because we know that cyber is massively increasing. So that project is absolutely fantastic, and it will enable, what we really want people to do is to be able to talk to someone in their community about cybercrime, so they don't feel less embarrassed or stupid about asking a question about it. We know we all need to keep safer and ensure that we're secure online, and that I know our passwords are safe and all those things. And I think often we all feel that's all a bit complicated and we know we should do it, but it's a bit difficult. So we've been working really hard with Avast to ensure that we've got really simple messages about keeping safe online and making sure that your kind of virtual home is as safe as your real home. So that's certainly a really exciting project.
That sounds brilliant. That does, really. And you're right, it's a massive, massive problem. And I think this, again, is one of the challenges for the police service in the 21st century, that it is on such a massive scale that, you know, a lot of resources are having to be redirected into that kind of that cyber risk. So it's encouraging to see that you're investing time and money, you know, into this kind of area. Do those ambassadors do training as well?
They do deliver training. They do deliver, obviously, a lot of it's been during COVID, so it's been a bit limited, but we've been training them. That's certainly the aim, is that they'll run community events that will include training and information for local people to ensure that they're as safe as possible. And the latest scams, I mean, a whole load of scams came on during COVID. But to make sure people are as safe as possible online and from fraud and scams that happen online as well.
Yeah, it's really good to see that. I'm obviously a big advocate of trying to get younger members involved in Neighbourhood Watch. I know we've touched on sort of some younger people like you just mentioned, but have you got any sort of specific kind of campaigns on the go at the moment where you're directly trying to get more? I know when I was in the police, we did a little bit of junior Neighbourhood Watch, but it wasn't massive. Does that still exist?
It does still exist in a few places, and I think where it exists, it's great. We've been doing some targeted work with young people. We got some funding last year and did some targeted work in some communities with young people and students, and in some areas of high crime, where Neighbourhood Watch traditionally takes off and grows less well. and about what we can do about that. And we will, we're applying for funding at the moment to get a specific paid worker that will help develop a kind of projects for young people. I think, as we were saying earlier, one of the keys to that is that it needs to be really easy for young people to volunteer, and you know, and whatever we do, it needs to be something that they, that they're involved in inventing and developing themselves, and that's something that they can dip in and out of. So we are in the process of doing that. We do have, say, some projects with young people. I mean, we work with, we do some fantastic work with the Co-op, one of our sponsors, and last year we had a Young Neighbour of the Year. So this is about getting younger people that have been volunteering, particularly during COVID. So we ran with the Co-op a competition for the Young Neighbour of the Year to try and encourage just what young people manage to do. And we're in the process at the moment of developing a partnership with Deliveroo, with their riders, because obviously they're, as the changing landscape of our society, Deliveroo riders and drivers go into our communities, they do spot things. So we're working with them about what they can do to be, keep their eyes out in the community as well as protect themselves, but what they can do if they, you know, the things that they might observe, whether that's, I don't know, domestic violence, human trafficking, drug dealing, county lines, whatever it is, that things that they may spot and that they may be able to report as well, because they're just as concerned about that as anybody else. And obviously Deliveroo riders and their drivers, they're all young people, so those are the kind of ways we're trying to approach it, in different ways to try and encourage and get involvement from young people, and hopefully they'll get more involved in Neighbourhood Watch.
A couple of things for me there. You're absolutely right around young people and getting them to help you design what they are going to then ultimately deliver, because I think that's a mistake we sometimes make, that we don't ask young people what they really want and what they really want to do and how they can contribute. So I think that's an excellent idea. And I think the Deliveroo thing is brilliant, because I was out last week actually somewhere, I think I was delivering a microphone somewhere, and there's absolutely loads of them about where I live. So it makes perfect sense to, you know, I'm sure not every one of them is going to sort of, you know, rise to the occasion, but if you can get even a small proportion of them to start looking out for things, that has got to be a really good way forward. And I like that innovation, John. It's a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just, you know, it's like we were saying earlier, we just have to think sort of innovatively about how we can involve young people, different members of the community, you know, involved in, I mean, in a weird sort of way, I guess, Deliveroo drivers and riders, they're a sort of community in themselves. So, you know, they, if we can involve them in Neighbourhood Watch, you know, when they're as a delivery, or maybe, you know, a few years later, they'll be a volunteer, you know, for Neighbourhood Watch, and they'll be a coordinator in their street or whatever, when they've got more time or whatever else. So I think, you know, we need to engage lots of people in different ways. I think the traditional Neighbourhood Watch is absolutely brilliant and is such a strong legacy, and it is fantastic in local streets, communities, and I've got no qualms about it. It's absolutely brilliant. But we need to do different things as well. You know, the world's changing, and it's not that we need to replace the traditional Neighbourhood Watch, because we absolutely don't, but we need to offer different things for different people, so we've got something for everyone. You know, if I, a perfect place for me is that everyone knows about Neighbourhood Watch and can access information to be on sort of community-based crime prevention. That's where we want to get to. Whether someone's a member or not, they can access that information and pass information to the police or to Neighbourhood Watch, and everyone will feel safer and more secure as a result.
Yeah, and it comes back to what you said earlier, really, about that being able to sort of dip in and dip out. I think if you give people lots of different options, like you were saying, the traditional doesn't always float everybody's boat, I'll be honest with you, but I think if you give them lots of different options, like, you know, you can get involved in the cyber, you can get involved in, like you said, the delivery type of stuff, I think people just are going to be a lot more attracted to, you know, playing a part in their own communities, and it will go a long way to rebuilding communities in the 21st century. So I think the more you can do, I think the more members you're going to attract. How many members do you currently have at the moment across the UK?
I think we have about 2.3 million households that identify themselves as members of Neighbourhood Watch. So it's a huge number. And we have around 90,000 volunteers or coordinators, people that kind of proactively promote or do something for Neighbourhood Watch as well. So it is right across England and Wales. I mean, there's Neighbourhood Watch Scotland as well. I mean, you know, it's a huge community.
It's absolutely massive. It's brilliant to see, and let's just keep pushing it, and we'll certainly help you do that too. And let's try and increase this membership. You know, it's still a brilliant number, but we, you know, as we move forward, you know, we'll try our best working all together to try and increase that as much as we can as we try and rebuild communities after COVID. If somebody wants to be a member, how would they go about it?
If they go on the Neighbourhood Watch website, which is ourwatch.co.uk, there's lots of information about groups in your area, wherever you live, and how to join Neighbourhood Watch. There are also some of the local Neighbourhood Watch associations have their own websites, but that's probably the easiest way to get involved.
I was looking at the website the other day. There's a rich vein of information on there. It's a really comprehensive set of pages, and I would urge anybody to sort of go on there and have a look, because you will get something. You know, everybody will get something from it. So I'd certainly urge people to take a look and just see what options are available to you to get involved in this amazing organisation.
Yeah, there's lots of information just how to make sure that you stay safe and, you know, keep yourself as safe as possible. We've got fantastic campaigns. We've had some brilliant online campaigns around burglary, and we've got one coming out in a few weeks around dog theft, and another one coming out around car crime to make sure, you know, car crime is on the increase post-COVID, and making sure. And we try and make all of our campaigns and all our advice simple. You know, we try and make sure that we try and give people three things to remember or do. Anything more than that, and I know I'll forget them. So we try and keep it really simple, to, you know, either whether that's around being secure in your home or making sure that you've got, you're least likely to be a victim of car theft or dog theft and those sort of things. We try and keep it really simple because that's what we want. We don't want it to be complicated.
No, absolutely. Two flavours of COVID, as you've just mentioned. Dog crime, massively on the increase. Never known it so bad. Catalytic converters. I've obviously seen some recent social media posts from you guys around that. Absolutely, because I still work with the police in Staffordshire on quite a daily basis, they're getting massively hit. West Mids, I think it's a national problem now. What specifically are you guys doing to kind of assist with that dog issue and the vehicle sort of theft, the wolf theft from issue?
Well, I mean, I think what we know is that the vast majority of car thefts or thefts from car happen because people have either left a window open or they've left the car unlocked. I mean, while that's in some ways hard to believe, if everyone made sure that stuff wasn't visible, did the really simple things, making sure that nothing was visible in their car, and made sure that they locked it, you know, and ideally parked it in somewhere that's light, you know, car theft would go down. We've been working on the kind of catalytic converter. We've been doing some work with the Met and their work with some products that you can use, which, you know, it are fairly cheap and can be done at a garage to make it very, very difficult for someone to remove a catalytic converter. And I think what we would like to do is get to the point where car manufacturers are doing that themselves. So it's not that you're buying a car that's got a risk of having your catalytic converter, then you do some extra work on it at a garage to make it really difficult to remove a catalytic converter. It'd be great if the manufacturers are doing that themselves.
I totally agree. You know, whether they do or not, I don't know. But yeah, that would be good to see. But it's good to see that at least there's an option at the moment where they can take it to a garage and just make it that little bit harder. Because I was watching a video the other day, and it's literally seconds, isn't it? They literally jack it up and they're away with it in seconds. So you've got to start being a little bit more aware of this issue.
Yeah, of course. You know, and it's easy to think that criminals are daft, but you know, they can hone their skills very well, and like you say, things like catalytic converters can be taken in seconds, which is bonkers. Yeah. But you know, if you can do something to prevent that, all to the good.
Yeah, and I think some of the messages that you're putting out and the police service are putting out, you know, it is raising more awareness around these kind of issues, and it's really good. What about sort of the dog crime sort of stuff? Because that is massively on the increase at the moment. I mean, I was talking to someone the other day about the prices of dogs now are going through the roof because of COVID, and also, you know, there's a lot of them being stolen to order by the looks of it. What sort of things are you doing around that?
Well, we've been working with the Dogs Trust and Battersea around, you know, what you need to do in it. And it's those classic sort of things of making, I mean, I think often dogs are stolen from gardens because the garden's not secure, and making sure that your dog is kind of, your dog or animal is visible. But microchipping is the best way of making sure that you've got a, you know, that there's a, I'm not quite sure what the right word is, but you can, you know, there's the chances of finding your dog if your dog does get stolen. So I think those are the two things, and making sure that it's visible that your dog is microchipped, you know, because that would in itself can put off someone who may otherwise steal a dog. I mean, I think certainly the dog trusts have been saying to us that they're expecting, given when people go back to work, which will happen, I guess, over the next few months as we return to some sort of normality, that there may well be quite a lots of people sadly getting rid of their dogs who've had them during COVID and have, with them when they've had more time. But certainly the dogs charities are expecting there to be more dogs kind of put into those charities looking for homes over the next 6 months. So we shall see, but hopefully not, but maybe that'll happen.
I hope not. As a dog lover myself, I hope not. But yeah, I think that's a bit of a reality, I think, John, you know, and it's whether these charities can cope with the demand. It's a bit like that old Christmas kind of scenario, isn't it, when people have dogs for Christmas and then they get rid of them after Christmas.
Yeah, the dog's not just for COVID. Runs off.
Yeah, oh no, don't tell me that. Oh well, we'll keep our fingers crossed on that one. John, obviously what we're about with the Community Safety Podcast, I think some of the stuff you're doing is absolutely fantastic. I do think there's an awful long way to go around our communities. It's a big question, but how do we start to transform some of our communities in the 21st century? What sort of ideas do you have as a leading man of one of the main charities in the UK? What would you say?
I think, I really think there's something about the key to it is connectedness and communication. And I don't think that's necessarily physical. I think it's really important that we do literally know our neighbours. We don't have to be best mates with our neighbours, but, you know, being able to have a conversation, just say hello, nod to them as you go to work. I think that is a significant way of beginning to kind of reconnect. As you said earlier, we live in really busy times and we are all really busy. So I think those small steps to reconnect with our community with all of our communities is absolutely vital. And I think we all have a responsibility. I think if we leave it to somebody else, we'll go back to the kind of disconnect within our communities. Whereas if we all do something, and I think one of the things that COVID has kind of taught us is that most of us do want to feel connected to our communities. We know there's lots of evidence that where you're more connected in your community, whatever that community is, whether that's not, even if it's an online community or more likely your kind of physical community or your faith group or whatever it is, when you feel more connected, you feel safer, you feel better, your well-being goes up. So it is a win-win, but it's something that we all need to do and all need to take some responsibility for. So it is, for me, it's that communication. I mean, there's a phenomenal report which came out a couple of months ago, the report on the Talk Together project, which is about, you know, the report is entitled Our Chance to Reconnect, and it is very much about communities in the UK and what we need to do. And I think volunteering plays a key role in that. That's not just to the support and the work that volunteers do, but the benefits of being a volunteer as well. I think, you know, that's really important. I think we need to kind of tackle, I really think we need to tackle hate crime and kind of encourage inclusive citizenship. So when people move either from other countries to the UK or around the UK, that we kind of welcome them into our communities as best we can, and not put up barriers to people. I think that's a really kind of crucial way that if you don't do it, then all of us just kind of retreat a little bit more and have a little bit less contact with our neighbours and our communities. And I think that's the way to disaster. I really do. So I think for me, it's simple steps. If we all did a couple of things, you know, every couple of weeks that connected us with our communities, even if that's just having a chat with your neighbour or doing something positive, I think those are the things that can matter. You know, I think for me, things like street parties, the big lunch, those sort of things are important, that we focus on what we've got in common, our assets in our community. So what we like, you know, things that we like to do, what's good about our community, whether that's, I don't know, the local football team or anything else. We've had so much over the last couple of years with whatever side of the fence you fit on in terms of Brexit, and all those kind of things, that we are quite divided. And I think we're becoming it's harder for people to accept, okay, you disagree with me, but I'm still your neighbour. We still look at the same trees. We still look, you know, if I live in a block of flats, I've still got the same view. There are lots of things that we share. And I think that's the bit that we need to kind of focus on. Easy to say, but I think it's all built on ordinary people doing small things, which creates a fantastic, more positive environment in all our communities. So I'll get off my soapbox now.
No, that's fine, John. I like that. And that's the issue that you picked up on with, like, when people coming into the country and, like, hate crime. It is a big problem, and I do think people are very quick to judge. And the way I look at communities, you know, I appreciate and respect different cultures, but I think everybody's got so much to give and so much. If people could just take a little bit of a step back and just not be so, you know, prejudge all the time. I remember working in a very diverse community in a place called Smethwick in the West Midlands, and we had the first kind of tranche of, like, all of the immigrants that came over in the early 2000s. In a very, very small community, we had about 27, 28 different nationalities, and it worked reasonably well. And because we spent time and effort, and there were community events put on, we were a dedicated neighborhood team back then in the days when policing got a bit of cash, and it worked really, really well, and they all got on fairly well. And I set up a radio project during that period, and we were getting kids from all different backgrounds. And what we found was that regardless of where they came from, when they sat down and they were actually putting together a radio program to tackle, you know, we'd like tackle things like drugs and knife crime and stuff like that. Yeah. They'd all work together, and those barriers were completely taken away. So it gives me hope. It really does give me hope. But I do think people have got to put their barriers down, and we've all just got to make that a little bit more effort, more collaboration as well.
I couldn't agree more, Jim. I think we've done it in lots of ways. During lockdown, people's barriers did come down a bit because they needed to, and we all kind of had we were all in the boat together, sort of, you know, everyone worried and concerned and kind of, you know, fighting COVID and that sort of crisis. So we kind of did put our barriers down. And I think if we can, as you say, carry on not judging everybody or, you know, or being too quick to judge, and kind of try and be a bit more inclusive with the things that we've got to offer and everyone else has got to offer, I think our communities are richer, and we will all, you know, our communities can reconnect. I really do. I genuinely believe that our communities can be more connected again. More connected than they are now. I mean, I think technology can help. It can also get in the way sometimes, but there are lots of different ways we can connect. And as you say, I think it's important to focus on the kind of things that communities think are important for them. It's no good me, I mean, I live in Brighton, it's no good me trying to pretend that I know what's really important for someone that lives in Cornwall or Cumbria or Chiswick. You know, it's the people that live there. I might have a good idea about what's important to me in my local community, but not elsewhere. So I think making sure that local people and communities can help to make those decisions and are involved in them is a key way for people to feel kind of empowered, and, you know, and a sense of agency, you know, a sense of, you know, what we want is people to feel a bit more pride in their community. I mean, I'm a real advocate of, you know, and I think Neighbourhood Watch does this along with other organisations, but Neighbourhood Watch does this about kind of litter picks in areas, so people just feel a bit more prideful of their community. And while you do it, you probably get a chance to chat to a couple of people in your community. It's those small things I genuinely think can make a massive difference.
Yeah, you're so right with that. You know, I've done a few little picks in my time, and they are absolutely amazing. Do you know what? It's one of those things that I'm going to be honest here. It's one of those things, like, leading up to, I think, oh no, why did I volunteer? You know, and I'm going to be really honest here. But when I do it, I love it. I absolutely love it, and I engage with a lot of people, and I have a real load of fun. And I see, you know, the fruits of my labour when that street or whatever looks cleaner. So, you know, I'm a big advocate for it. You know, I'm going to put my hands up and say I'm not always 100% committed initially, but when I do it, I love it. So I think you're absolutely spot on there. And I'm really pleased that I'm talking to somebody who's got a bit of hope like me as well. You know, we've had some great guests on this podcast over the last few weeks.
Yes.
And they're all sharing a very, very similar, you know, determination to do things better and to change communities. So can't thank you enough for coming on, John, and just sharing that enthusiasm with me, because it's what we need. We need to give people hope, don't we?
Yeah, we do. I think if you give people the opportunity to do things and you know, lead with a bit of hope and stuff. People have that as well. They almost like need the permission, need the opportunity to kind of focus on some of the good things and the positives. And I think that is what we do. And I think there's so much fantastic around our communities. We just need to kind of build and not knock sometimes, I think.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things in this country. I think we're very quick to criticise. You know, you see other countries and I think they celebrate success. And I think sometimes we're very quick to kind of build people up and then knock them back down. So I think we've got to start getting into this mindset that we need to encourage. I don't think there's that many bad people out there in the world. I really don't. And particularly in the UK, I think people just need a helping hand from time to time to be able to get over obstacles and troubles that they've experienced. And I think if we can continue to help them and not knock them down when they're starting to get back up, we might go a long way to actually transforming communities a little bit more.
I couldn't agree more. I think it's, you know, it is easy to... we're great. I mean, we have some fairly rubbish weather, so we're good at moaning about things, and I think the weather's one of them. But I think we should, you know, if we can be positive around, or just focus on the things that we share and that we have in common, you know, and that whether that's food, the local team, the local park, the fact that you're involved in a litter pick and those sort of things, I think that's the stuff that can build. And I think that's something that, you know, is close to the heart of everybody in Neighbourhood Watch about, you know, wanting to be connected and wanting to make their local community better.
I think you're right, and you picked up on this earlier, you know, everybody within reason, you know, wants their communities to be better and safer. They don't want to live in squalor. They don't want to live in high crime areas. You know, nobody wants their area to be labelled, you know, this is a terrible area where crime is high and ASB is high. People want to live in nice areas, but we've all got to contribute to that. You know, you can't just sit back. And sometimes what I find is that some people, you know, they just want you to do everything for them. I think we've got to empower people to take responsibility for those communities as well. We'll do our bit as organisations, but I think they've got to do their bit too. And I think that collaboration will go a long way.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I think it's, you know, we can all do our little bit. And if we all do our little bit, that will be have a huge impact on your community, the next door community, and the communities in the UK as a whole. I really do believe that.
I'm all excited now. Thanks, John.
Good.
John, just before we wrap up the interview, is there any other campaigns that you want to mention around Neighbourhood Watch Network before to our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, we've got coming up in June, we've got Neighbourhood Watch Week. So that's the 5th to the 10th of June, which is our kind of annual celebration of all things Neighbourhood Watch. I mean, the focus this year is going to be about listening to communities, talking to the communities, and then doing. So activities within the community. So things like a litter pick, perhaps doing a microchipping event for dogs, doing a community listening project. Those are the kind of things that we'll be encouraging people to do. And it's part of a much broader celebration that we're hoping, this is part of the big lunch as well, that there'll be, June will be a whole month of community. There's lots of charity and weeks during June that are all about community. So that's something that we'll be celebrating right at the beginning and then carrying on through the whole of June. So yeah, Neighbourhood Watch Week, 5th to the 10th of June is our next big event.
Brilliant. And as I say, from our point of view, John, you know, if there's anything we can help with at the Community Safety Podcast, please give us a shout. We're more than happy to help push out communications for you and support your brilliant organisation. So please take me up on that offer as and when you need it.
Brilliant. You'll regret saying that, Jim. That'll be one of those volunteering things that you'll go, wow, why did I say that? But yeah, I will do.
No. I'm a man of my word, honest.
Great, Jim.
John, we've had a great interview, but you know, I always ask the same question at the end. Is there anything that I haven't asked you or something that you wanted to cover that we haven't?
No, it's been really good. Now, one of the things I think I've been really pleased about is how positive I think the conversation is and the potential for organisations like Neighbourhood Watch. I mean, I think Neighbourhood Watch has got an incredible past and has got an absolutely fantastic future. I really do. I think we need to do things a bit differently, as well as celebrating the past and what Neighbourhood Watch does really well. But I think there's a great future for my organisation and communities.
Yeah, and I think that's a great message to end on, really. You know, if you're listening to this podcast and you think, you know, I really do like the idea of this Neighbourhood Watch option of volunteering, you know, I'm going to jump on the website and have a look. You know, from what John's been saying, there's a lot of different options from your traditional Neighbourhood Watch. So please have a look and see how you can help. Let's see how we can rebuild communities. John, I can't thank you enough for coming on. This has been an absolutely brilliant sort of 50 odd minutes that we've been chatting, you know, so positive, and I just love all the stuff that you're doing. Just keep doing what you're doing, and you've got a great team around you. I know I've spoken to Deborah, who works in your communications, so just keep doing what you're doing, and we'll try and help as much as we can over the course of the next, you know, year or so and beyond. So thank you very much.
Fantastic, Jim. Thanks. It's been a real pleasure.
Brilliant. Thank you to all our listeners again. We really do appreciate your support with this podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast if you can. We really do want to get our mission across to as many people as possible. So please tell a friend, tell a colleague, and we'll catch you on the next episode. During the recent interview with John Hayward Cripps, there was just a slight error with the website address that he gave out for Neighbourhood Watch. The correct website address is www.ourwatch.org.uk. That's www.ourwatch.org.uk. I really enjoyed that interview with John Hayward Cripps. Neighbourhood Watch is just so important to build our communities in the 21st century. People that have a genuine interest in reducing crime, reducing antisocial behaviour, making our streets safer. It's got to be a good thing. I was always a massive advocate of Neighbourhood Watch when I was a police officer, and I will remain to be an advocate of Neighbourhood Watch, and it'd be great to see it grow under John's stewardship. Thank you so much again for listening to the Community Safety Podcast. We really do appreciate it. Please rate, subscribe, and review the podcast, and don't forget our website as well, www.thecommunitysafetypodcast.co.uk, and we will catch you on the next episode.
You've been listening to the Community Safety Podcast, with thanks for support from St Ives Chambers, RHE Global, and Me Learning. Join us again next time to help us explore how we can transform our communities in the 21st century on the Community Safety Podcast with Jim Nixon.